You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Many children in the U.S. are not faring as well as those in other developed nations. A new documentary series tries to find out why. Here's a bit of the documentary, The Raising of America, Early Childhood and the Future of Our Nation.
Across multiple dimensions, the well-being of our children ranks 26th out of 29 nations. It all begins in infancy.
A baby has a brain. We all have brains. They make you think, make you talk, makes you walk.
Yay! Come on, now.
The development of the brain is laid down in the early years, well before children start school, even before they start talking.
Joining us now to talk about the raising of America is producer Christine Herbie Summers. Christine, welcome to Central Time.
Well, on behalf of the huge team that put this whole project together, it's my pleasure and thank you.
Well, tell us about some of the big questions that you wanted to answer with the series.
I think that the big underlying question was, what are the structures, institutions, and policies that modern America surrounds its children with, embeds in its children, that affect their early development? That was the big and core question. And the goal of the series was to kind of unpeel that question.
And the series begins by looking at, as we just heard in that little bit of the documentary, at early brain development and why it's so important. Mm-hmm. What kinds of things did you hear?
I'm sorry?
What kinds of things did you hear about why early brain development is so important?
Well, as the documentary indicates, we're born with a lot of brain cells. Most of them are not connected to one another, and so they don't function to tell us where to put our hands or our eyes or how to speak, etc. The connections are built over time, and they're built over time in interaction with a child's environment. When that child's environment is salubrious and nourishing and safe, and full of serve and return, those connections build over time, and they build not only to one another but to different parts of the brain, and that is what enables finally at around age 5 or 6 the very important what we call soft skills, which are how to control your impulses, how to think one step in front of another.
I want to just jump in. You used the phrase serve and return, which is something you talk about in the documentary, but tell us a little bit about that concept, what it is.
It's both a subtle as well as a dramatic concept. You can see it in the experiment that is the video experiment that's shown in the video. You can see a mother saying "Hi, honey" to the baby, and the baby cooing back "Hi," and then "Oh, that's nice." That's kind of classic serve and return that you can see really easily. But other kinds of serve and return, which is basically the interaction between an adult caregiver and a child and an infant. More subtle form of it is if a child looks in a certain direction, the adult looks in the same direction. So the child is serving up an action, and the adult is returning that serve.
And some of that was very dramatically, as you talked about there, shown in the documentary, the still face experiment, I guess it's called, where the mother will not respond to the child who's trying really hard to get the mother's attention. And it is as a mother, I actually had to look away and take a break from watching that because the baby just got so distraught during that experiment, turning red in the face and crying. But it did, I guess, illustrate what you're getting at here is that there is a link here.
Well, and it's a biological one. We are the only species that takes as long as we do to become self-sufficient. We rely on adults to protect us, feed us, clothe us, shelter us for a very, very long time, very much longer than other mammals. So we rely on being able to serve something up, help, hunger. I'm wet, I'm dry, I'm in pain. And we rely then on the protective response. So otherwise, immediately what happens is a stress response is generated within the child. And we see this in the documentary. And that stress response is, you know, flee, fight, or freeze. Which is what our bodies do when we sense danger. Now, one of the important things that Jack Schoenkopf makes very clear in the documentary is occasional inattention like that is not going to harm a child. In fact, it's good for a child to be able to learn to self-soothe and, as they get older, to learn to protect themselves. So, but it's when that serve and return is interrupted in a chronic kind of way that and even as far as neglect, that is damaging to the development of the child's brain.
We're talking right now with Christine Herbie Summers about the new documentary series called The Raising of America. And I want to make sure we get to the work of Marilyn Essex now, Christine. She's with the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She led a groundbreaking 20-year study looking at the long-term effects, obviously, of parental stress on kids and kids who actually are growing up into adolescence and young adulthood. And starting out, what was she after as she started this?
Well, it's interesting. That study, and this goes back to your original question, which was what was our core question, she started that study in the early 1990s when an 11-year fight for family leave was being launched. And she and a colleague wanted to know what was the long-term effect of not having maternity leave. And the first thing that they did was measure the stress of parents who did not have family leave, parental leave, maternity leave. And of course, you can imagine that it was much higher than among those who did have parental leave or could take, because of their economic circumstances, a longer parental leave. But it's interesting because the impetus of for her study was really policy or the lack thereof, which is to say, no, we have no federal paid family or parental or maternity leave in this country. The only one, by the way, in the world except for Papua New Guinea that does not. So she wanted to know she didn't want to prove that there was, because she's a scientist. She wanted to know whether and if there was any long-term effect of that.
And the shorthand there is yes, she found out there was long-term effects. How did that make itself known?
Over a series of 14, well, over 20 years, there were 15 different interventions that Marilyn's team did, including cortisol testing of babies at age, you know, when they were infants, and then when they were four.
Cortisol is a stress hormone, right?
The cortisol is the stress hormone. And it measures how much stress a child is feeling at the time. And, of course, when that activates the stress pathway, it does all sorts of other metabolic things that are not good if they're chronic. So over these 14 evaluations, it really was everything from measuring cortisol to talking to teachers to videotaping interactions of kids to questionnaires with parents, 14 years of gold standard science culminating in a multidisciplinary investigation of brain connectivity. And with the fantastic imaging center at the University of Wisconsin, Marilyn and her team and Richie Davidson were able to correlate early childhood stress with parental stress, with lower connectivity between what the amygdala, which is the alarm center of the brain, and the prefrontal cortex, which is the settling down, decision making, reality check center of the brain. And it's very important that those are connected. Otherwise, a child or an adult can be in a chronic state of stress. The prefrontal cortex isn't talking to the amygdala and saying, settle down, there is no danger, it's going to be okay. And that's what she found. And it's a rather remarkable finding, because it links policy, science technique, and brain imaging technique, and outcomes.
We're talking right now with Christine Irby Summers about the new documentary series, The Raising of America, and we'd love for you to join the conversation, too.
Do you find yourself struggling with some of the basic stresses of parenting, strapped for time or money, unable to focus on parenting, stress levels there? What do you see short-term? What do you see worry about maybe as the long-term impact of that? Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What do you think about ideas like a family leave? Do you think that's important for long-term outcomes for kids? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're continuing our conversation with Christine Irby Summers about the new documentary series, The Raising of America, and we'd love to have you join in.
That documentary looks at early child development. You can call in with your questions, your thoughts, maybe your experiences as a parent or someone who works in early child development, maybe working in a preschool, as a teacher, a doctor. Call in now at 800-642-1234. What do we need to change in the United States to make early childhood a better place, a better time for kids and their long-term outcomes? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Christine, we were talking about the work of UW Madison professor Marilyn Essex, her groundbreaking study of 20 years looking at the long-term effects of parental stress on children and on into young adulthood. So, again, what is the takeaway there for, I guess, big picture for society when parents are stressed out when their children are very young?
Well, let me first say that Marilyn would be the first to tell me to say to you that this was a huge interdisciplinary team, and she doesn't want to take sole credit for all the 20 years of work. And it was a great team. Many of them are in the documentary. The takeaway is that parental stress is transmitted to a child, not necessarily genetically, although when a child is in utero, a highly stressed pregnant mom whose cortisol is high will transmit that to the fetus. But long term, as we saw in the documentary, when a child is stressed young, it changes brain architecture. It can change brain architecture. Jack Schoenkopf, a leader in this field, has dubbed the worst stress as toxic stress, which is that it literally destroys brain cells and connectivity. What does that do in the long run when a child is an adult? It makes that it has the potential of making a child hypervigilant, an adult hypervigilant, unable to concentrate, always looking for the next fear, the next threat. It can also be a precursor to heart disease, diabetes, and other stress-related diseases.
And let's go to our callers now. We can get some voices in on this. We've got Richard first in Huntley, Illinois. Richard, hi.
Hi. Well, I've had the greatest opportunity to be an early childhood educator for over
30 years. Oh, my gosh.
And it changed my life. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I know that I've learned from children is they have knowledge. Mm-hmm. And no matter what level of living they have great knowledge. And once I learn it, I can help them and they can help me. So the brain development situation is tremendous. And I was just going to call. It's nice to hear a conversation about early education.
All right. Well, thank you, Richard. And Richard, getting at, as an early childhood educator, what can they do to help? You're talking a lot about the parents and the home and the child, but a lot of children's time, once they're past a certain age, sometimes just 3 months, is spent with people who have to care for them who are not their family. What can they do? Christine, are you there?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking to Richard. What can children do?
What can early childhood educators do?
Oh, what can early childhood educators do? The first thing that early childhood educators would probably say is to provide a nurturing, warm, child-centered environment for that child. Not to marginalize children who seem to have behavioral problems, but to develop strategies to help the children cope with those. But the most important thing is to provide, nurturing, child-centered care. And we have a hard time in that context in this country. First of all, good care is very, very expensive. It's hard to find, and the need is growing. So that is what early childhood educators can do.
Richard, thank you so much for that call. Let's go next to John. John joins us from Green Bay. Hi, John.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to share my story here. I have a 17-month-old. I was able to take 12 weeks of family leave. I wish I could have taken more, to be honest with you. My wife and I are doing attachment parenting and extended breastfeeding and things like that. Just basically, I just wanted to point out how just kind of natural everything feels with attachment parenting, and how it's funny that I kind of have to hide some of the things that I do to more mainstream, like my coworkers, who probably wouldn't agree. Oh, you're spoiling the kid. Oh, but it's like, how much spoiling can you give to a 12-month-old or a 3-month-old at that? You know.
Well, John, thank you so much for calling, and congratulations on your now 17-month-old. And Christine, attachment parenting. Did you look expressly at that as we start to wrap up here?
No, we didn't. We didn't look at attachment parenting in particular. I think what we looked at more was what are the things that can detach parents from the kind of attachment parenting that, and John is absolutely right, is completely natural for most parents. Most parents want to do exactly what John was able to do. And yes, our society not only does not provide the structures for it, but has a squeamish attitude about it. The documentary tries to very persuasively communicate that there is solid science behind what John is talking about. Hold the child, attach to the child, be there, be natural with the child for as long as possible.
Well, John, I want to thank you for your call. And Christine, thank you to you as well. So glad you could join us today.
My pleasure and my team's pleasure.
We're talking there to Christine Herbie Summers, a producer of the series The Raising of America, and she's president of Vital Pictures.